to be during the day.
The winter's been very mild, except it's quite cold. So if people want to live that way, and they're voting to live that way by their presence in numbers and demonstrating that, then the Citizens Committee is doing them a real disservice by forcing them into this. It costs over $200,000 a year to run there.
You were at the, I heard you speak at the city council meeting at the afternoon session when CCH, the Citizens Committee, was seeking, what, $50,000 for startup funds for Community House, or, not startup funds, just more funds for Community House, leftover funds from last year they wanted to dump into Community House. Did you come back for the second session? Were you present when the council reconvened?
They decided not to give the money to CCH. They were unconvinced that they had provided enough detail in the folder papers they submitted. They submitted the same letters they submitted three, the same figures, the same construction figures, $622,000, $300,000 to buy the field, $1 million, $300,000 to operate it. And I argued it didn't have anything to do with homeless people because, when you create a program requiring to pay to $300,000 and you're asking $288,000 in rent beginning the second year, you're creating a liability sinkhole. Nobody in that field has, no group of 48 people in that existing homeless community here in Santa Cruz have $288,000 a year to give the Citizens Committee so that they can create, another asset and become an $800,000 a year entity. They already spend $250,000 on their homeless garden. I guess $70,000 in wages goes to the homeless. They spend about $250,000 again on their vans to the churches and vans to the armory. And nobody wanted the damn van ride to the armory. They wanted a piece of fabric in a quarter acre muddy field. That's what they wanted. That's not profitable though for this nonprofit entity.
Well, let me ask you this, Chris. I got two questions. First, can you find out the specifics? You've said several times that the Citizens Committee gets some kind of per person refund from someone, or amount of money for each person that goes up to the armory. Can you maybe flesh this out by getting more specifics on this when you next contact the show?
I'd like to know what it cost them. I know they just got a very large amount of money, $1 million from EFSG grant, and they get that money obviously based on what services they provide, and how that breaks down at per person cost per night. Mm-hmm. Would be interesting to know, because we know what the field cost around. It cost practically nothing compared to this. I mean, it is virtually 1% of the operating budget per month. Well, I don't know, maybe 3% of what property a tent committee costs. About 3 to 5% of what the trailers will cost to operate, and they'll serve, five times as few people, and the trailers will not serve the homeless, because, as I say, it is not a for homeless. It's going to be a halfway house. They're going to be pressed to make the rent and their operating budget.
Now, didn't SOS, some of our shelters, the group that Dan and Bob Riverman belong to, and I belong to too, and I guess you did as well, didn't they ask for some funding as well at that city council meeting last Tuesday? And I guess Bubba was looking for, what, $25,000, half of the amount of money available. What was the city council's final decision on that?
Okay, I only heard their decision not to give CCH their remaining unspent CDBG applications, but I guess Sharon Conabo and Barbara Riverwoman, and that's about it. That is the only two pair of people. SOS identifies as certain. There's a so-called core SOS person, and I'm definitely not in it. I've only seen their membership list once, but there's only a few people in the so-called core group, and they're it.
Mm-hmm.
And
I've been cut from the press release. So I'm not in it either.
But I do believe they're trying to get a piece of property adjacent Bob's Pine Grove in at the bottom of the Pogo Nip. And
I think Dan's up. Let's maybe we can get him to comment. Dan, can you comment on the SOS? I'm not saying that I'm not a part of it. I'm just saying that it seems that people who are controlling SOS that's Barbara and Sherry are kind of making their decisions as to who people should contact, and I got no problem with them being the people to contact, but I did feel that particularly with Sherry, since there had been some, she had excluded some of us activists in a previous incarnation back in 1990 from being a part of that process. I wanted to make sure that it didn't happen again. Unfortunately, it seems to have happened again somewhat with me. But Dan, what was your question about SOS, Chris?
Well, I think they're a little unrealistic to expect that to get a prime piece of property in the Poconip for 150 people when they already had an existing running campground which they found necessary to wipe out. I don't think the trailers are anything other than a pretext. The only reason they are accelerated is to wipe out the vote the campers made, which was to stay there because they couldn't even fill their armory program as long as the campers were happy with the muddy field. And I don't think the city is going to, you know, you have to go through this Bob's Pine Grove and the Pogo Nip and the neighbors around there and the
Lighthouse Field.
All the roads that they'll have to walk through in order to go to the pavement to have the meal now because there's no dirt anywhere to sit or under trees or any. They've blocked that all off. Are those people going to tolerate this? And they didn't barely tolerate the existing campground, even as the numbers were being reduced due to the weather.
You're talking about the residents, right? I mean, about the surrounding businesses. And
the
such?
City and the businesses that will impact, because the argument is always is it's you're dispermitted to exist if you don't have a place to sleep. This was the only somewhere that it was allowed to sleep. You always had this pretty long-standing argument with Rockin that Rockin always misrepresented your view as saying, oh, well, he wants people to be able to sleep anywhere and everywhere, and this was the only somewhere where anybody could be, and he goes out there to speak into the camera for 5 minutes and gets extremely good press because he's a manipulative academic Marxist expert at it. And merely what he's doing out there, riding his bike out there, is to go and speak in the cameras about how generous he is to give these people who are basically, I think, cutting their own throats by not staying there an extra 2 weeks out of the state park.
What do you think, Dan?
Well, everybody has good arguments about the subject, and right now I don't trust any of the politicians to be really honest, and I don't trust the county supervisors or the city council. It appears that somehow we have to come up with our own strategy, you know. Depending upon these people, just isn't working. They're so anti-homeless, it's unreal. And we have to set up our own situation. And then maybe we can go back to these people and say, look, this is what we have. We have no wages involved in distributing this. And maybe we can even become, a legal nonprofit entity ourselves. And literally be nonprofits, you know, with no wages or anything, and people just running the place, homeless people running it themselves. I think it's the only answer that we can come up with. We're also still looking for people with private land and stuff that may want to lease, rent us a piece of land, or if they need labor to clear their land. The homeless camp out there at New Brighton Beach is more than willing to go for something like that. But I see getting absolutely nowhere with the city council or the county supervisors in any of these pieces of land or anything, especially yesterday when we were told to go to Fort Ord and try to get those houses down there for the homeless. They want to ship everybody out of Santa Cruz. It appears to be upper-class white community with probably not only homeless prejudices, but racial prejudice maybe, because the low-cost housing hasn't been instituted. It's supposed to be instituted in Santa Cruz County, and that's probably their fear that maybe some minorities might get into this area. So we need to wipe out the homeless and make sure the low-cost housing doesn't come in, because it's always attributed to gangs and people that are poor and all kinds of things. And so we have to do this, I think, on our own. We have to really sidestep the city council and the county supervisors. Their inflection of their voices, they're talking out of coldness of heart. The supervisor we talked to yesterday, he talked with gravel in his throat when he was saying, well, I gave you an alternative to go to Fort Ord, and you didn't like that alternative. And we had some plans for, like, the Poconif and stuff, and he also said with a gravelly voice, you're not going to get it the way you like it. See? So in other words, you're going to do what we say, or you're not going to get anything. you're going to get shipped out somewhere else, you know, or you're going to be breaking the law.
You know, I have a fantasy about all this. Of course, this is one of my old fantasies. I mean, this year there has been really the most publicity and the most determined resistance to, removing campers from a piece of property where they're legally sleeping and throwing them essentially into the arms of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban. We've really had, you know, major media information on this. We've had, I mean, mostly misinformation, but some real information has gotten out. It seems to me that I have this fantasy that it would be nice if 50 homeless people, and they don't have to be the new Brighton Beach campers who are trying to do their own thing elsewhere. It can be, you know, 50 people downtown who are tired of being hassled by the sleeping ban, just climb over the fence and put their tents down on the open air shelter property and just go back to trying to lead a normal existence there. You know, maybe they have to start digging some latrines or hire somebody to bring in a porta potty. I mean, that land is not being used. That land is open. There's a need for a legal place to sleep. And you know, I mean, Sherry and Barbara and SOS can talk all they want about cooperating with city council members and supervisors and trying to find a place in the Poganip or Lighthouse Field or, you know, behind
Benchlands.
St. Francis or the Benchlands.
How likely is that?
If they can do it, that's great, and that's fine. But in the meantime, there's a piece of property just sitting there that has been the center of all this controversy that has been, and I think everybody in town would understand if homeless people came back and camped there. I mean, it would make perfect sense, and I think it would certainly garner some community support. So I think if people are interested in this, they should give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833 for a reoccupation of the open-air shelter. Now, I'd like to point out that this might be construed as illegal behavior because it might be construed as me urging people to engage in trespass. Well, I don't think so. I think a contract was made between the people living on that field and the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I have a tape recording of that contract, which I've played repeatedly on the air, which states that campers will not be asked to move until 10 days after community house permits are granted, or there will be renegotiation if there's a weather problem. And that puts things into February. So it seems to me that for the next 3 weeks, that property is open to the homeless. That's how I look at it. And I think that some of us in the community might view it in the same way.
I never agreed to negotiate an eviction date. I thought that strategy was wrong to begin with, and I said it. And, you know, I didn't carry the day, though, but I think that land was worth defending, mm-hmm. and is still worth defending. And hopefully the Stanford, it's coming up in the middle of January now, and they still haven't moved the trailers in, as far as I know. Maybe they have.
No, they haven't.
Okay, I hope that Stanford, I hope that people can call Stanford and get them to stop moving those trailers in, because this is not going to help the homeless. Unless they move them in under a different condition and open them up for free, I don't see how you can extract $600 bucks from a homeless person in rent. That's just absurd.
Well, I think that I'd like to hear from you more details of that. Maybe in the next show you can give us a number that people can call in Stanford and try to, you know, to protest this action with a citizens committee. And then secondly, maybe you can give us some more info, if you can get it, on the specific amounts of money that you're telling us that CCH actually gets for getting people in the armory and in the churches.
Yeah, none of the city council was convinced CCH had the money to go through with the construction. Yokoyama's unconvinced that she didn't even want to give the money to move the trailers unless they had the money to do the entire project. And this was my thinking months ago, too. They shouldn't just move them in order to store trailers while they move the people who were in tents out and away.
Right, I agree. I think January 23rd is the next meeting of the City Council, CDBG, 3:30 in the afternoon at City Hall, for those who are interested. And I think there'll be a similar, I don't quite have a next date. The next supervisors meeting will be Tuesday, not next Tuesday because that's a holiday, but it'll be a week from next Tuesday. And usually the supervisors meet all day, and I don't know if the agenda item is going to come back on the curfew. I'm kind of summing up there, Chris, because we're running right into Bob LaMonica's time. We've got to get off the air pretty quick here.
Well, it's going to cost him $28,000 to even move the trailers from Stanford, and that's just to move them physically, these 10 units. So CCH may not even have the money to do that. So I'm happy the citizens, the city council has not given these people who have not justified, not coming up with more detailed construction.
Well, I do agree with Barbara Riverwoman in one respect. I mean, I don't particularly like to be, you know, at odds with CCH. I'd rather see all of us working together to open up a campground. But it's unrealistic at this point, I think, to go back and, you know, try to schmooze it up with city council and supervisors and think you're going to get anywhere unless you have some real indication or some real muscle behind it. And I don't, you know, and that's why I think all this information you're presenting, Chris, is very important, and I hope you continue to dig it out.
Okay, that $50,000 can be used for a campground. This is according to Tim Reynolds, this $50,000 can be used for campgrounds.
Well, I had even heard in one incarnation of a story that there was serious consideration being given to the SIS proposal. So I would hope that that's happening. In fact, I encourage everyone to call City Council at 429-3550. And this is everybody who's listening to this show and thinks the campground issue is important, including you, Chris, and me, and everybody else, and tell them to give the money to SOS. Don't give it to Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
I agree. I think a campground's worth more to the homeless than trailers for nuts.
429-3550.
We'll see.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks, Chris.
We're approaching the end of the hour here, and I'm going about to sign us off. Anything you want to sum up with, Dan?
Yeah, one of the things that I wanted to mention real quickly is it's what's so ironic about this entire situation is that their name is Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And you would think, with a name like that, that they would actually be going to bat for us, to the city council, to the county, and everything else, and be working in unison with us. Instead, they're working against us. And they evicted us out of an open-air shelter. How in the world can you have that name? And it just doesn't make sense. It sounds like the city and the county need to really take a close look at this and find another group of people who are definitely nonprofit and not sucking up all the wages that could have gone to homeless supplies and open air shelters and whatever, camp fees, whatever it is. Anyway, I just wanted to add that.
And I also want to remind anybody that Gina has her hearing before the Karen Gillette's board, the Homeless Community Resource Center, today at 3:15 out at 115 Coral Street. And she's looking for any support and any public participation possible. And I think it is important, however you view the facts, however much you're a friend of Karen Gillette's, and I don't really view myself as an enemy of Karen's, that you nonetheless support the process of a fair hearing. It's particularly important in times when it's illegal to sleep that you not be cut off from sleeping spaces because of, let's say, staff problems. I don't know. I wasn't present when this incident with Gina happened. I only have her account, and then a letter from Karen Gillette, and then comments from a few other people to go by. So we're going to sign off here so Bob can get in and clear things off. I'm going to play a little bit of the curfew tape that we're listening, and we'll go out on the Tuesday's final debate on the curfew, actually, some public input, and the next voice you hear will be that of Bob LaMonica with what is usually a very interesting hour. Also, if you want to be on this show, do give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. If you want to support a reoccupation of the open-air shelter property or any other acts to oppose discrimination against homeless and poor people downtown or in Santa Cruz, or to lobby the city council against the sleeping ban, give a call to 423-HUFF. And next show is going to be Monday. You're entitled to calling. You're invited to be on the show. Show up at Taco Bell at 9:45 at Laurel and Pacific for Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. It's your show. It's my show. It's all our show. So show up.
Hello. My name is Sam, and I carry. actually, Diane made most of the points I was going to make, but I'd just like to encourage you, if you'd like to pass this, that you put some sort of writing that can be terminated after 3 months and for legal, just out of principle, just in case it doesn't work out the way you want it to, which is entirely possible, although it is entirely possible that everything will go wonderfully and there will be absolutely no complaints about harassment. Who knows? It could happen. But anyway, I'm 20 and I look 16, especially when I shave. And I used to play that to Reno, and that proved it. I mean, I got invited everywhere I went, and anyway, I guess I'm done. That's a hard end to fall on.
I'm Victor Ober, and I'm president of the Seaflood Park Improvement Association at Aptos. We've heard many very eloquent young speakers here tonight, and I think what a lot of them say makes a lot of sense. I believe the people here are law-abiding citizens. I think what this ordinance is really intended to do is to get the element of the younger group, perhaps, that aren't here tonight and are out doing wrong things, such as if we spend $1 million a mile in our society of building freeway sound walls and men and adults that are covered with graffiti, this is of some concern to everyone who pays the taxes to support these things. In our area of the county, we have a lot of older people, many of whom are afraid to come out of their houses at night because they're concerned about what might happen to them. I think we must address ourselves to them as well. I believe our sheriff's department has an excellent concept in the community service centers. Our improvement association thinks so. We contributed something for the rent, and I hope that you supervisors will collectively, after all of us supported for 6 months, will find it within your power to continue to support the rental for these centers. This is going to be a good concept. In Aptos, Sergeant David Deverall is our community service center manager. He's already actively involved in the community. We see a lot of good coming from this. The sheriff's people that we have come across are all well educated, they're well trained, they're responsible people. I believe Sheriff Tracy spends a great time of his personal time out in the community talking with people, and it's a credit to his department. I think that this legislation, if enacted in that area to do so, will give them one more tool to handle some of the problems that come up. I can understand the concerns of the young people here tonight, but I don't really believe they will be affected. Perhaps it will be when someone will be stopped and it will be inconvenient and embarrassing to, but our law enforcement community has a job to do. And I believe that we should support them in this. I think they will be responsible in it. And there is always a review process in anything that goes through. If it's found not to be workable at some future time, I'm sure it can be addressed at that time. But in the meantime, we would urge you to go ahead with this legislation. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Eleanor Eisenberg. I'm an attorney with the ACLU, and I'm speaking for the ACLU of San Luis as well as an individual. On the way over here, I was thinking that I should talk to you as a human being. Some people think that's inconsistent with being a lawyer, but I am in fact both, and I'm particularly urged to speak as a human being given the early remark that you are civil lawyers. I also want to tell you that I really appreciate the work of hearing this matter at this time of day or evening and giving people who are going to be most affected by it an opportunity to be heard. I think it's a wonderful thing. When I was here in November addressing this issue, I did speak to you as a lawyer and raised a lot of constitutional concerns, including selective enforcement. And I should tell you that as a lawyer, I have been handling only civil matters for my 20 years as an attorney. I do very little criminal defense, and I was unfamiliar with juvenile processes in the criminal arena. And as I read the proposed ordinance, I kept scrawling all over it, especially with the enforcement part. What is the hearing? Where is the adjudication? Where is the opportunity to be heard? Where is due process? And it's not there. I talked to several of my friends who practice juvenile law, and apparently kids are not entitled to a lot of due process. Diversion in the context of a criminal case for a juvenile is often a good idea.
This is from the Santa Cruz Sentinel, October 13, 1995. Recall effort fails against county district attorney. And the final paragraph reads as follows, quote, I want to thank everyone out there for their support and for rejecting something like this that doesn't have a place in the criminal justice system.